This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Maxwell Ivey, disability advocate, podcaster, and motivational speaker, among other things, and he is known as the Blind Blogger. But first, disability news for the week of July 28, 2025. Fewer states are meeting their obligation under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA, according to a new report from the U.S. Department of Education. Only 19 states met the federal standards for serving students with disabilities age 3 to 21 in the 2022-23 school year, down from 20 last year. The rest were classified as needs assistance, except for Washington, D.C., which was labeled needs intervention. States that fail to meet requirements for two or more years may face federal enforcement, including technical assistance mandates or directed funding. A separate review of DEA programs for children, of IDEA programs for children under age three, showed slightly better results. 30 states and Washington, D.C. met requirements, while 16 states need assistance and four need intervention. Critics, however, warn the rating system is flawed. Candace Contiella of the Advocacy Institute said the process fails to consider key performance measures and is structured in a way that makes it impossible for all states to achieve top ratings. Currently, only 44% of students with disabilities live in states that meet IDEA standards. Just six states, Kansas, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Missouri, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, have consistently met requirements for the past 12 years. As the Americans with Disability Act marks its 35th anniversary, advocates warn that the landmark civil rights law is under threat. Signed in 1990 by President George H.W. Bush, the ADA banned discrimination against people with disabilities in education, employment, transportation, and more. It was hailed as a historic move toward inclusion. But advocates say progress is stalling and even reversing. Allison Barkoff, a former federal official and disability rights leader, says people with significant support need still face major barriers and bias. She warns of serious threats from court rulings and federal policies. Concerns have grown following major cuts to Medicaid, considering the foundation of disability services and efforts to weaken federal education and accessibility rules under the Trump administration. Said Katie Neese, CEO of the ARC, quote, "These are not isolated developments. Protections are being stripped. Services are being cut, and people with disabilities are being pushed back out." End quote. At a recent ADA anniversary event, AAPD President Maria Towne noted that nearly every Congress since 1990 has seen attempts to weaken the law. Still, she and others say the disability community can fight back if it stands united. ADA sponsor Tony Colio said, quote, "We must rise up again. That's how we make change," end quote. And finally, in Meridian, Idaho, Nathan Hill spends every day caring for his 16-year-old son, Brady, who lives with severe disabilities after surviving brain cancer and a stroke as a baby. Brady relies on a feeding tube, a ventilator, and round-the-clock support. Hill says outside caregivers were inconsistent and often unavailable, so he did it all himself. During the pandemic, a temporary Medicaid rule allowed parents like Hill to be paid for providing that care. But on July 15th, Idaho ended the program. Officials say costs jumped from $8 million in 2022 to $24 million this year. Initially, they blamed fraud, but later admitted the growth came from more families enrolling. Now parents are scrambling. Idaho already faces a critical shortage of care workers, and many say there's no one to hire. Single mom Shannon French, who cared for her children with disabilities, said losing the income will push her onto food stamps and Medicaid. Families are urging lawmakers to fix, not abandon, the program. They've proposed stronger oversight instead of ending what they say was a lifeline. Senator Julie Van Orden, who chairs the State Health and Welfare Committee, says she's working on a new plan, but for now, families are left without support. Van Orden said, "There's a definite need here, but we can't keep going down this road," end quote. And that's the news for this week.
I'm going down this road feeling bad. I'm going down this road feeling bad. I'm going down this road feeling bad, bad, bad. And I ain't gonna be treated this way.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm happy to have on the show today my new friend Maxwell Ivy, who I met just a few weeks ago. Welcome to the program, Max.
Well, thank you, Vicki. It's a real pleasure to get to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's been a short time, and I was just very impressed by you and the work that you're doing, and you have a podcast, too, as well. So I want to hear all about that, but first, I just want to hear about you and tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Right. So I grew up in a family of carnival owners and did that until my dad's death caused us to go out of business. I then started a website helping people sell their used amusement park and carnival rides on the internet. But in 2007, the internet was so lacking in accessibility, I had to teach myself to code HTML just to get online.
Mm.
As I took on all the different challenges that go into having a online business, people were impressed and asked me to share more of what it's like to be a blind entrepreneur. That led to a second website as the Blind Blogger, a name that people had been using for me on social media, because most people with disabilities at that time were hiding their disability, and I was pretty much out there every day sharing what I was doing, and became the Blind Blogger. And since then, I've written 4 books, traveled the country solo, been on hundreds of podcasts, eventually started my own podcast called What's Your Excuse?, which is about overcoming adversity. And now I have a new podcast called The Accessibility Advantage, where I'm trying to advocate for more accessibility for and inclusion of people with disabilities by spotlighting the many positive benefits of inclusion. I feel like there's plenty of people working on regulations, compliance, legal actions, and negative publicity. So my place would be emphasizing the positive. And I find that when I give people a good enough why and get them to understand the need, I have a lot better chance of not only getting them to embrace accessibility, but to do it from a position of hope rather than a position of fear. And as you well know, the things we do from a position of fear, we don't do real well, as can be seen in all the news stories that you were reading earlier, where we have regulations. The regulations either didn't go far enough in the beginning, or they've been scaled back over time, or, you know, we have people in positions of leadership that are crying about millions and budgets of trillions. So I feel like my place is to emphasize the positive, and the more people that see accessibility as a competitive advantage, I think the more people we will creating inclusive products, services, and content.
Yeah, you and I are in the same lane, I think, when it comes to trying to stress the positive and the resources for people that are out there. So tell us, how long have you been doing your podcast then? And you just started a new one as well?
Right. So I've been doing What's Your Excuse since July of 2016, off and on.
Mm-hmm.
And I started the new podcast a little over a year ago, but no sooner than I started it, I got hired to host a podcast for somebody else, and that kind of ate into my time. So In the last 2 months, I've recorded more consistent content, and now I'm in the process of switching to recording my content live, kind of like what you're doing, and with a goal of creating a new podcast episode for one or the other of my shows on a daily basis. So we'll see how Max adjusts to that. As I mentioned before, we started came online here. I had a run into the accessibility and technology this afternoon when it comes to going live on the internet, and it was a case of a piece of software that worked perfectly the first few times I used it, and then I go to use it again, and they've updated it, and the one button I really need is no longer accessible.
Oh, great.
No longer labeled where I can find it and click it. So, but yeah, it's podcasting has been interesting. I really enjoy having the conversations and knowing that, you know, by having a chat with somebody and talking about accessibility or talking about adversity, that, you know, we can encourage people, we can entertain them, we can educate them, and we can inspire and motivate them.
Yeah, I think all of that's really important. What are you, your obviously accessibility is a big part of your advocacy. Give some examples of some of the stories that you have told people to help them understand the importance of that.
Well, one of the things is that it goes beyond the raw numbers. And of course, as you know, the raw numbers are pretty impressive. 1.3 billion globally. 1 in 6 on average in pretty much anywhere in the world has a disability. But that does not include people who don't identify as having a disability, like people who are aging and living with some of the same challenges of vision loss and hearing loss that people with a disability have, or who are living with decreased motor control because of their aging. So that's a group that isn't included. But then beyond that, it doesn't count the people who care for and care about people with disabilities, like yourself, like the gentleman you mentioned in your story. It isn't just the people with disabilities. It's the friends, family members, coworkers, social networks, advocacy groups, all of those people that care about the person with a disability. And they are decision makers who will make decisions based on whether or not something is being done in an accessible manner.
Right.
And then beyond that, there's the loyalty factor. As consumers, there's so little out there, either in person or online, that's accessible, that we tend to support the businesses that are willing to make the effort. We'll stay with them through good times and bad times. We'll stay with them when they have to raise prices, if that's something they have to do. We even see accessibility as a value-added proposition that goes into setting prices in the first place. So there's a big loyalty thing, and the final piece is advocacy, because most companies, no matter how good their product is, they are paying people to promote their product. There may be ads, but in a lot of cases nowadays, it's influencers, social media people, it's YouTubers. But when you make a product or service that's accessible and deliver it in an inclusive manner, you have this huge audience that's going to advocate for you whether you pay us or not. So I would say the those things, when you combine them, the number of people with disabilities, the number of people that the disabled person affects and influences whether they're trying to or not, the loyalty factor, and then the fact we will self-advocate for inclusive business, those are all benefits. But the really cool thing is there's two other benefits. One is that quite often when you improve accessibility, you improve the user experience for everybody else that doesn't have a disability. And then the other bonus is that the search engines and the AI bots are getting really good at detecting whether or not you're creating an accessible environment on your website or app. And they will give credit to people who are making the effort, and they will move those businesses to the top of the search results. So your search engine rankings are being helped or hurt by how you approach accessibility in your online business.
Yeah, that's really important. And I just to note too that, you know, yes, there are those people who, the rare people who don't really have any connection to the disability world yet, but if they get old enough, they will be joining. So Everyone has a stake in this, I think.
Yeah, I recently spoke with a woman named Missy Sue Mastel, and she doesn't have a disability, but for a short time in junior high school, she didn't have use of her arms. And so she understands a little, and she likes to say that at some point in everybody's life, we will all be differently able. And some people prefer that over disabled. Me, I try not to get tripped up by the language. But whether it's trauma or aging or a medical condition or the results of cancer, there are so many things that can cause a person to become disabled either overnight or as they age. And so as a society, we really need to be thinking about this. Do we want to wait until people need the help and then start thinking about it and maybe doing something about it? Or do we want to start building that in now and making it part of how we develop our infrastructure, our business culture? And, you know, really, like a lot of other things, by not doing it, we're setting ourselves up for a lot of extra expense. And maybe that expense won't be from our government, because who knows what the level of investment or concern will be from the government bodies in our country from year to year. That's just the way elected bodies behave. But, you know, there are thousands, maybe even millions of people who are having to leave their homes because their homes weren't designed to cope with somebody who's getting older or becoming less able to get around. And they can't afford to update those homes, so they have to move. They move into assisted living or into apartments or in with other family members. And if that house had just been built with a little care for access when it was first built, somebody would have been able to stay in there for their entire lives. And, or if they wanted to stay, they wouldn't have to invest thousands of dollars to update the house. And the same applies for airports and bus stations and restaurants and websites. When we build access into them from the ground up, from the very beginning, or what is called universal design.
Yep, I was going to say universal design is the word, this is the terminology to use there for sure, instead of retrofitting.
Yep. Exactly. And when we do things with the approach of universal design, we will save ourselves a lot of money and a lot of headaches down the road. But unfortunately, we live in a short-term memory society where people don't think about things like that. They don't have the conversations either inside their own head or with others, and they think it's somebody else's problem, or we'll fix that when it really becomes a problem. But yeah, universal design, and I'm finding it interesting now that you're starting to see people talk about universal design that combines disability, environmentalism, it involves other marginalized groups like people who are African American or Hispanic or women, and bringing all these different needs, you know, making something access to people of all abilities is really starting to become a thing, but it's not becoming a thing fast enough. And there are still so many companies and government agencies that are like, not our problem. We don't have the budget. We don't have the people. We don't have the know-how. We ain't going to do it.
Yeah, I think some of that comes from the fact that parents of younger children are much more insistent that their kids with disabilities be included in regular classes in school and to have real jobs in the community. So because of that insistence, people are starting to notice it a little bit more. Do you think that might be a possibility, or you just think this is a natural evolution?
No, I think you're right on. That's at least part of the process. And I try to be an optimistic, positive person, as you know, for meeting me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the parents of younger people and the young people themselves, because young people with disabilities are starting podcasts, they're starting blogs, they're writing books, they're speaking, they're participating in para-athletic events. We have people, the younger generation, and the other thing the young have that I didn't have, and I don't know about your child, but the one thing the young have today is less of there's no way you can do certain things. When, you know, the list of things that I was automatically not capable of when I was graduating from high school in 1984, that list of things I wouldn't be able to do was a lot longer than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So the parents being insistent, and then the children and the teens and the college age people with disabilities also being insistent and putting themselves out there. You know, one of the things I've been very happy to see in my time online, especially over the last 10 or 12 years, is when I started the blindblogger.net and decided to accept that name people had given me, I got pushback from people with vision loss telling me that it wasn't nice that I was using the, quote, blind card, unquote. And at that, you know, and at that time, a lot of people with disabilities were hiding their disability because they thought it would be a stigmatizing thing that would keep them from succeeding in this new world of online activity, online business, you know. So over the last 10 or 12 years, that belief has turned completely around. And I'm happy to say I was one of the guys out there in the front of this that was, you know, I'm a former car, so I don't know how to not put myself out there. You know, we learned about promoting things from a very early age in my family. So it's been nice to see more and more people with disabilities and with challenges similar to disability putting themselves out there, being open about their disability, using the emojis, the stickers, you know, having the information in their profiles, their business pages, their websites. You know, just seeing people have the freedom to be who they are and decide that if they want to disclose that there's nothing wrong with it, and in fact, there's a freedom of it, there's a power that comes from it, because you get to decide not only whether or not you'll disclose, but you get to decide how you want people to feel about you as someone in a wheelchair or someone with cerebral palsy or somebody who's blind.
Right. And you've talked a lot about, you know, how much progress has been made. In your mind, what are some of the biggest challenges that still remain?
Right. Well, a lot of the really big challenges are still mindset. We still have a vast majority of people who think that there's either no money in including people with disabilities, or the challenges are too hard. They don't have customers who have a disability, or they never will. So that's still a big part of it. There's still a lot more people who don't believe they need to be accessible than there are who are building things from the ground up that are accessible. I'd say the other challenges are just not knowing what the government agencies are going to do, because I went to CSUN, which is adaptive technology at Cal State University Northridge, back in March, and half the talks were about how AI is going to end the world for people with disabilities, and the other half were whether or not the changes in the federal government were going to be good or bad for the enforcement of existing regulations. So I would say that's just people's mindset is a big part of it. And of course, the other thing is just the natural changes of people's attitudes over time, whether we're talking about the people on the street or the people in power in, you know, government. Because just a year ago, the Department of Justice rule that covered accessibility was expanded to make it very clear that federal, state, and local agencies had to make their websites completely accessible. They had to meet the WCAG, mm-hmm. which is the Web Content Access Guidelines, or else. And less than a year later, we have a Department of Justice that's decided that those may be the regulations, but we're going to try to reverse them, and until then, we're not going to enforce them. So the vagaries of regulations, whether or not they're enforced, is a big challenge. But I'm actually encouraged in the area of regulation, not by the U.S. government, but by governments in other countries, because, as you know, for somebody who's online, back about 4 or 5 years ago, when the U.K. and the EU passed new regulations about your rights to your private information, that we weren't passing any new laws in the U.S., but because so many companies want to do business on a global level, almost everybody here in the U.S. is either compliant or knows they need to be compliant with the standards for privacy information privacy in the UK and the EU. That's just the way it's happened. And the EU has passed a very, I guess you'd call it progressive law on improving accessibility. And it comes with some pretty significant financial penalties for people who actually are located in those countries. But I actually feel like that, plus the new laws in Australia and the new laws in India, that are going to force businesses here in the U.S. to think about accessibility in a way they haven't before, because they know they want to do business outside of just the United States. You know, so I think it's like a lot of things with disability. There's very little that's totally horrible, tragic, wrong. There's very little that is rainbows and lollipops and jelly beans good. And in a lot of cases, we have to decide to find the things that work for us and to push as hard as we can with things that aren't working to try to help people. I'm really surprised by how much more inclusive we were during COVID than we are after COVID. And I really wish the same people who were coming up with solutions during COVID were coming up with solutions now, but most of them are no longer in those positions. So I would say, you know, challenges are mindset, constantly changing regulations, businesses, corporations that don't want to have to adopt accessibility and push back against it. And then we have to remember the ADA itself was a flawed law to begin with, because the ADA was not intended to be what we want it to be. It was intended to be the very least that Congress thought they could get away with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first off, they specifically said they were not going to create a new protected class like the people who are over 50, women, African-Americans, Hispanics, et cetera, and they didn't. They said, we don't want to put a hardship on businesses for customers or employment. So whereas both other laws apply once you have 10 employees, the ADA doesn't kick in until you have 25 employees, which when you consider how many businesses in this country don't even have 10 employees, that's a really high bar.
Yeah.
You know, the reasonable accommodation aspect of it basically puts most of the power in the business owner's side of the equation, even with arbitration and administrative judges getting involved. It's still mostly, if a business owner says he can't afford to do it, he's probably going to get away with saying he can't afford to do it, you know?
So for folks who are out there listening to this who are really interested in some of the issues that you talked about, probably need information about how to find your podcast.
You mean we've been talking long enough, it's the time where I tell them how to find me?
Yeah.
So I am at theaccessibilityadvantage.com. You can also find the work that I've done as the blind blogger at theblindblogger.net. And my favorite social media network is LinkedIn, where I'm Maxwell Ivey. That's I-V-E-Y. And on either of my websites, there's a link where you can send me a message or an email. And I really hope y'all will reach out, because I do not want people thinking I'm one of those people you have to buy something from or be ready to hire or book for an event. But you can send a message and have a conversation. So I do hope your listeners will reach out. And if they have a website, you know, they're a sole entrepreneur, a mompreneur, an agepreneur, if they have a website and they'd like to have somebody check it, I'd be happy to review any of your listeners' home pages for free, and also refer them to a couple of free websites where they can get their accessibility tested so they'll know where they stand.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for joining me today, Maxwell Ivey. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign-Urbana.
Good news, good planet.
Seen as a turning point.
You are tuned. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week.
stand.